Nurse Guinness opens the door and is seen in the light, which comes in from the hall.
Mr. Magnan's not here, Ducky. There's no one here. It's all dark.
Try the garden. Mr. Dunn and I will be in my boudoir. Show him the way.
Yes, Ducky.
Nurse Guinness makes for the garden door in the dark.
She stumbles over the sleeping Mangan.
Oh! Oh, Lord, sir, I beg your pardon. I'm sure I didn't see you in the dark. Who is it?
She goes back to the door and turns on the light.
Oh, Mr. Mangan, sir, I hope I haven't hurt you plumping into your lap like that. I was looking for you, sir. Mrs. Hushabye says, will you please?
She notices that he remains quite insensible.
Oh, my good Lord, I hope I haven't killed him. Sir! Mr. Mangan? Sir?
She shakes him, and he is rolling inertly off the chair on the floor.
When she holds him up and props him against the cushion.
Miss Hessie! Miss Hessie, quick! Don't you, darling, Miss Hessie!
Mrs. Hushabye comes in from the hall, followed by Mazzini Dunn.
Oh, Miss Hessie, I've been and killed him!
Mazzini runs round the back of the chair to Mangan's right hand.
And sees that the nurse's words are apparently only too true.
What tempted you to commit such a crime, woman?
Do you mean you did it on purpose?
Now, is it likely I'd kill any man on purpose? I fell over him in the dark, and I'm a pretty tiny weight. He never spoke nor moved until I shook him, and then he dropped dead on the floor. Oh, isn't it tiresome?
Nonsense, he's not dead. He's only asleep. I can see him breathing.
Well, why won't he wake?
Mazzini speaks very politely into Mangan's ear.
Mangan, my dear Mangan.
Mazzini blows into Mangan's ear.
That's no good.
Hesione shakes Mangan vigorously.
Mr. Mangan, wake up. Do you hear?
He begins to roll over.
Oh, nurse, he's falling, help me.
Nurse Guinness rushes to the rescue. With Mazzini's assistance, Mangan is propped safely up again.
Would he be drunk? Do you think, pet?
Had he any of Papa's rum?
It can't be that. He is most abstemious. I'm afraid he drank too much formerly and has to drink too little now. You know, Mrs. Hushabye, I really think he has been hypnotized.
Hypno what, sir?
One evening at home, after we'd seen a hypnotizing performance, the children began playing at it. An airy stroke to my head. I assure you, I went off dead asleep, and they had to send for a professional to wake me up after I'd slept 18 hours. They had to carry me upstairs, and as the poor children were not very strong, they let me slip, and I rolled right down the whole flight, and you may laugh, Mrs. Underwood, but I might have been killed.
I couldn't have helped laughing even if you had been, Mr. Dunn. So Ellie has hypnotized him. What fun!
Oh, no. It was such a terrible lesson to her. Nothing would induce her to try such a thing again.
Then who did it? I didn't.
Well, I thought perhaps the captain might have done it unintentionally. He is so fearfully magnetic. I feel vibrations whenever he comes close to me.
The captain will get him out of it anyhow, sir. I'll back him for that. I'll go fetch him.
Wait a bit. You say he is all right for 18 hours.
Well, I was asleep for 18 hours.
Were you any the worse for it?
I don't quite remember. They had poured brandy down my throat, you see, and
quite.
I was...
Anyhow, you survive. Nurse, darling, go and ask Miss Dunn to come see us here. Say I want to speak to her particularly. You will find her with Mr. Hushabye, probably.
I think not, Ducky. Miss Addie is with him. But I'll find her and send her to you.
She goes out into the garden.
Mrs. Hushabye calls Mazzini's attention to Mangan's figure on the chair.
Now, Mr. Dunn, look. Just look. Look hard. Do you still intend to sacrifice your daughter for that thing?
You have completely upset me, Mrs. Hushabye, by all you've said to me. That anyone could imagine that I, a consecrated soldier of freedom, if I may say so, could sacrifice Ellie to anybody or anyone. Or that I should have ever dreamed of forcing her inclinations in any way. It is a most painful blow to my, well, I suppose you would say, to my good opinion of myself.
Sorry?
What is your objection to poor Mangan, Mrs. Hushabye? He looks all right to me. But then I am so accustomed to him.
Have you no heart? Have you no sense? Look at the brute. Think of poor, weak, innocent Ellie in the clutches of this slave driver who spends his life making thousands of rough, violent workmen bend to his will and sweat for him, a man accustomed to have the great masses of iron beaten into shape for him by steam hammers, to fight with women and girls over a halfpenny an hour ruthlessly, a captain of industry, I think you call him, don't you? Are you going to fling your delicate, sweet, helpless child into such a beast's claws just because he will keep her in an expensive house and make her wear diamonds to show how rich he is?
Bless you, dear Mrs. Hushabye. What romantic ideas of business you have. Poor dear Mangan isn't a bit like that.
Poor dear Mangan, indeed.
But he doesn't know anything about machinery. He never goes near the men. He couldn't manage them. He is afraid of them. I never get him to take the least interest in the works. He hardly knows more about them than you do. People are cruelly unjust to Mangan. They think he is all rugged strength just because his manners are bad.
Do you mean to tell me he isn't strong enough to crush poor little Ellie?
Well, of course, it's very hard to say how any marriage will turn out. But speaking for myself, I should say that he won't have a dog's chance against Ellie. You know Ellie has remarkable strength of character. I think it's because I taught her to like Shakespeare when she was very young.
Shakespeare? The next thing you will tell me is that you could have made a great deal more money than Mangan.
No, I'm no good in making money. I don't care enough for it somehow. I'm not ambitious. That must be it. Mangan is wonderful about money. He thinks of nothing else. He's so dreadfully afraid of being poor. I'm always thinking of other things, even at the works. I think of the things we're doing, not of what they cost. And the worst of it is, poor Mangan doesn't know what to do with his money when he gets it. He is such a baby that he eats all the wrong things and drinks the wrong things, and now he can hardly eat at all. Ellie will diet him splendidly. You will be surprised when you come to know him better. He's really the most helpless of mortals. You get quite a protective feeling towards him.
Then who manages his business, pray?
I do, and of course other people like me.
Footling people, you mean?
Well, I suppose you think of so.
And pray, why don't you do without him if you're all so much cleverer?
Oh, we couldn't. We should ruin the business in a year. I've tried, and I know. We should spend too much on everything. We should improve the quality of the goods and make them too dear. We should be sentimental about the hard cases among the workpeople. But Mangan keeps us in order. He's down on us about every extra halfpenny. We should never do without him, you see. He will sit up all night thinking of how to save sixpence. Oh, won't Ellie make him jump, though, when she takes his house in hand?
Then the creature is a fraud, even as a captain of industry.
Well, I'm afraid all the captains of industry are what you call frauds, Mrs. Hushabye. Of course, there are some manufacturers who really do understand their own work. But they don't make as high a rate of profit as Mangan does. I assure you, Mangan is quite a good fellow in his own way. He means well.
He doesn't look well. He's not in his first youth, is he?
Well, after all, no husband is in his first youth for very long, Mrs. Hushabye. And men can't afford to marry in their first youth nowadays.
Now, if I said that, it would sound witty. Why can't you say it wittily? What on earth is the matter with you? Why don't you inspire everybody with confidence, with respect?
Well, I think that what is the matter with me is that I'm poor. You don't know what that means at home. Mind, I don't say they have ever complained. They've all been wonderful. They've been proud of my poverty. They even joked about it quite often. But my wife has had a very poor time of it. She's been quite resigned to
society. Shudders involuntarily.
There, you see, Mrs. Hushabye, I don't want Ellie to live in resignation.
Do you want her to have to resign herself to living with a man she doesn't love?
Oh, well, you see, are you sure that would be worse than living with a man she did love, if he was a footling person?
You know, I really think you must love Ellie very much, for you become quite clever when you talk about her.
I didn't know I was so very stupid on other subjects.
You are, sometimes.
I have learned a good deal about myself from you, Mrs. Hushabye, and I'm afraid I shall not be the happier for your plain speaking. But if you thought I needed it to make me think of Ellie's happiness, you were very much mistaken.
Have I been a beast?
Doesn't matter about me, Mrs. Hushabye. I think you like Ellie, and that is enough for me.
I'm beginning to like you a little. I perfectly loathed you at first. I thought you were the most odious, self-satisfied, boresome, elderly prig I ever met.
I dare say I am all that. I never have been a favorite with gorgeous women like you. They always frighten me.
Am I a gorgeous woman, Mazzini? I shall fall in love with you presently.
No, you won't, Hesione. But you would be quite safe. Would you believe it that quite a lot of women flirted with me because I am quite safe? But they get tired of me for the same reason.
Take care. You may not be so safe as you think.
Oh, yes, quite safe. You see, I have been in love, really. The sort of love that only happens once. That's why Ellie is such a lovely girl.
Well, really, you are coming out. Are you quite sure you won't let me tempt you into a second grand passion?
Quite. It wouldn't be natural. The fact is, you don't strike on my box, Mrs. Hushabye, and I certainly don't strike on yours.
I see. Your marriage was a safety match.
Oh, what a very witty application of the expression I used. I should never have thought of it.